No, no. Take your hands from the block. Oh, God have mercy. Get away, away. Oh.
Janet, love, whatever's the matter?
Get away from me.
Janet. Janet, it's me, it's Will. Wake up now, there's no one here.
Will? Oh, I thought... Oh, thank God. Will, I thought... I saw...
What is it? Are you in pain? The baby?
No, not the baby, not pain. Just... I saw... I don't know what I saw.
You must have had a nightmare. Let me light the lamp. There's still an ember in the hearth. Better. Look, nothing in the corners, nothing behind the curtains, at least that I can see.
Don't make fun of me, William. I was frightened.
I'm not. I wouldn't dare. I was worried about you, that's all. I don't like your pallor and the headaches you've been having, and I don't remember you ever waking like this before. Even when you were expecting the other babies, you slept like a stone. Didn't you?
Well, I always worried. If I woke in the night, it was to pray for survival, for me and for the wee one, that God would bring us through it.
And you survived, and our babies both thrived. Why would this one be any different?
The dream wasn't about the baby, Will. It was awful. A man in terror walking towards his death, and a crowd. I saw people, hundreds, thousands of people, all their faces turned up towards me. No, towards the man. And I felt his fear and...
Come on. Move over and let me in. There. We'll just curry in till you go back to sleep. I'm here. I'll chase the nightmares away. You're safe, sweetheart. Now snuggle into me. Cozy?
Mm-hmm. Will?
Hmm.
No. You'll think this is a fool's fancy.
And you know I don't think you're a fool.
Have you ever heard? Could Crawfordland be...
Could Crawfordland be what?
Has anyone ever... Oh, no, this is silly.
What? Spit it out, woman.
Have you ever heard that this house might be haunted?
Crawfordland haunted? No, I've never heard such a thing. In any case, between us and your father, we've rebuilt half of it. The workmen make so much noise, I don't think any spectres would hang around here much.
I might go back to those old papers.
You need to go back to sleep. You know what the good doctor said.
Third baby, three times the struggle, needs three times the rest.
I'm putting out the lamp. To sleep, my lady.
Just as you say, my laird. Good night. Lime trees, mountain ash, oak and birch have been transplanted to the front of the castle, which was quite a morass covered with rushes at William's succession. The trees were generally 40 years old, so William invented a temporary machine for the purpose of raising and conveying them from the woods around the loch, consisting of a long lever fixed to the axle tree and wheels of a cart. Oh. Why did the doctor insist on all this resting? There's so much to be done. Three times the rest, indeed. If I rest much more, I'll turn to stone and they can set me out as a statue on the terrace with a plaque on it. Lady Crawford sleeping. Fat lady sleeping. Fat, bored lady sleeping. Even writing in my diary only serves to show how little I have to write about. I need a project, something to pass the mornings, something restful. There are so many old stories about this family. My family now too, of course. The Crawfords have been here for 1800 years, they say, and Will tells me there are family legends going all the way back. And we Reggie will have it when we're gone, all being well. But to think old John Walkinshaw gave the whole estate, everything away.
My lady?
Oh, Wilson, yes. Could you ask for a fire to be lit in the library in the mornings, please? And have one lit now. It shouldn't be cold in me, but I felt a peculiar chill in there yesterday.
Very good, my lady. I'll see to it directly.
Yes. Oh, and Wilson?
Yes, my lady?
I need a new writing book, like this one. I bought 3 of them the last time we were in Edinburgh, with the delicate marbled end papers, see?
I can lay my hands on them, my lady. Do you want them brought into the library?
Yes, thank you. I'll come there once it's warmed up a little.
Very good, my lady.
Very good. Yes, I think so. Let's see what all these old family legends are really all about.
Are you sure my lady didn't say?
No, I told you. She just asked me to bring you to her, as long as the children were settled.
Ach, well, I wonder what it is. I'm sure nothing's amiss with the Waynes. I hope this one she's carrying turns out as bonny as they two rascals.
Come in, please, nurse.
You sent for me, my lady?
I did. I saw the children out playing on the lawn earlier. It's good to see them breathing in the fresh air after being cooped up by all these long, rainy days. Are they having their nap now?
They are, my lady. They'll be pleased to see the laird when he gets back.
And so will I. He's always in good spirits after a fishing trip.
Are you well rested, my lady?
Ah, you're afraid the laird will scold me for spending too much time in here. It's true. I'd better be sure to look rested and blooming when he sees me. Remind me to pinch my cheeks and bite my lips before he arrives. But sit, nurse. Here, make yourself comfortable.
Here, my lady?
I want to ask you about Crawfordland.
About Crawfordland?
Yes. I know there are legends, stories. The family have lived on this land for hundreds of years, I'm told.
So they do say, my lady.
And are there ghosts? I asked William, but he just thinks I'm talking nonsense.
I never heard tell of ghosts here. There's supposed to be a secret tunnel, though. I don't think anybody knows what it is, no.
What kind of tunnel?
It's below stairs gossip, my lady. I don't know how much of it's true, but they do say that it leads to Dean Castle.
But that's more than a mile away.
So it is. They say that the evil English King Edward besieged the Dean hundreds of years since, and he would have starved the Kilmarnock folk out and slaughtered them. But he couldn't do it.
Why not?
They say the folk at Crawfordland sent fresh meat and victuals to the Dean through the secret tunnel so their neighbours could hold out against the bloody English. Oh, pardon, my lady.
Oh, never mind. Go on.
Well, the Kilmarnock folk never went hungry, and it's said that they hung the new killed bullocks over the battlements to mock the English army. And when the evil king saw he couldn't starve them out, he went away to pester other folk, no doubt.
If that's true, where's the tunnel now?
I'm sure I don't know. I believe the old laird went looking for it a few times, but he never found it. But don't you be afraid, my lady. There are more hauntings around the Dean Castle than I ever heard of here at Crawfordland.
Really? What happened there?
I'm not sure I should be frightening you with these things when you're about to have the baby, my lady.
Oh, you won't frighten me. I'm just intrigued by these old tales. I started looking into Crawfordland's history amongst these dusty old books and papers. But I like to hear the stories that people tell one another, back and forth. Tell me about the Dean. What do they say happened?
I had this from my mother's aunt, my lady, and she was a servant there as a girl in the time of the 4th Earl of Kilmarnock. He was another William, my lady, like yours. This happened 70 years ago, long before the 45 Rebellion. They say that on one terrible day, the servant saw a fearful thing.
What the hell? Where do you think you're a water, you wee fool?
Come and see. Oh, please come and see. His lordship. Oh, God, help me. His lordship's heat. It's a war.
What are you talking about? His lordship's heat. Are you adult? Oh,
go and see. We all seen it in the tower. It's terrible.
Well, come on then, lass. Show me this heat of yours.
No, mine. No, mine. I'm no going near it again. Let me go.
Daft wee bugger. What's happening here? What's this to do? Away back to your work, all of you, before I fetch his lordship.
Look there! See for yourself!
Oh, my sweet God! What is that?
This is heat! Look! It has his lordship's face!
That's impossible. It can't be.
It's trailing blood! Oh, God, save us!
Oh, Christ, have mercy on us. What does it mean?
His eyes are open! Oh, he's trying to speak!
Shh. There, wee lamb. All dry and fed. Time for sleeping now.
Is she settled? Oh, sorry. Nurse, did I come in too soon?
No, madam. I would have hushed you if you had.
So you would. You'd hush the laird himself if he disturbed one of your wains.
I've done more than hush that laird of yours in my time. I've seen me skelp his bum when he deserved it.
Mrs. Howison Crawford Keefe has arrived, madam.
My sister-in-law? Already? I was expecting her later this afternoon. Better send her to my room, please, Wilson.
Thank you, Wilson. Mrs. Crawford is expecting me. Then I'll go straight in.
May I take your coat, madam?
No, I can manage, but tea would be very welcome after the journey.
I'll see to it, madam.
Janet, my dear, how are you?
Oh, Isabella, I'm so glad you're here. You bring a welcome breath of fresh air.
Do I? I feel as though I've been cooped up in that carriage forever. Any fresh air I bring in has come from your own woodland, my dear. And how is your baby girl?
Oh, she's well. Although not quite as robust as my other babies, but she eats and sleeps and seems to be growing. I'll ask nurse to bring her in, shall I?
Not if she's settled. Sleeping babies should be let lie. I want to know about you, dear. You're recovering well. You look a little pale.
Oh, I think I'm past the worst. Each time I forget how weakened I am by my labours and for how long. But at least we shan't need to fetch out my last will and testament for the time being.
What on earth do you mean?
Oh, nothing. I put away some notes. My instructions, if you like, for the care of the children and their education. Just in case I'm not here afterwards. Giving birth, you know.
Yes, I see. But you're as strong as a horse, Janet. You'll be back supervising the planting of trees and the building of walls in no time.
Oh, yes, I suppose I shall.
But meantime, you're bored to tears.
I was made to rest a good few weeks even before Winifred was born. You know I don't like to be idle.
That's true enough. I doubt the estate would have been restored half so quickly if it had been left to William. He likes his hunting and fishing too much.
Well, I'll say nothing. You're his sister.
It was certainly in a desperate state when we finally had the title back.
Crawfordland should have been a magnificent place, but it was so abused and pillaged. You saw the house when we came here, dismantled and tumbling to ruins. Every day the old servants and cottagers would come and tell us of some new destruction, the cutting down of the finest old timber, the dismantling of the garden walls. During the whole 13 years of the court case, no rent was paid, no tenants were listed.
At the time, we were given to understand that there was a factor overseeing the place. Was that not true?
Oh, the factor. The late factor, Mr. Walker, appears to have been a special kind of villain who had made many enemies around here. When the decision by the House of Peers was made known in Will's favour, that very morning, the factor was found in his bed with his throat cut.
William didn't tell me about that.
No, and I probably shouldn't have done either. But he left us with a great deal to do. All of the factoring records had been destroyed.
Thank you, Wilson. I'll see to it.
Thank you, madam.
Well, my dear, Mr. Walker may have left you in a mess, but it was our own cousin, John Walkinshaw, who started it all when he wrote that wretched will.
Yes, I've always wondered, why did he? Why leave it all to his banker instead of his own family? Thomas Coutts was already a very wealthy man, as I understand it. He didn't need the estate, and apparently had no interest in it whatsoever.
We never knew the reason why. Rumours flew from mouth to mouth, and it was said that John Walkinshaw was besotted by one of Coutts's daughters, that in fact he had only left the property to the father on the understanding that the youngest daughter, Sophia, would marry him and that it would revert to her on his death. It's absurd, but the gossips delighted in the notion. The old army officer in love with a girl young enough to be his granddaughter. Who doesn't love a scandal? And so the story went the rounds of society, embroidered and embellished here and in London. Such nonsense.
I've read the papers. I found the proving of the will.
You've read them? My dear, is that really such a good idea?
I've read some of them. While I was resting before the wee one was born, I spent a great deal of time in the library. I wanted to know more about the house. And I... But this is going to sound ridiculous, a woman's hysterical imaginings.
Go on, I'm intrigued.
I hardly like to say it. I had a sense, whenever I was in there reading, that someone else was there, in the old chair beside the window.
Cousin John's chair?
Yes. Oh, it sounds so silly now. I never dared to tell Will, or he'd have had me confined to my bed, an expectant mother's fancies. Oh, there was no one there, of course, and nothing that felt hostile to me, but a sense that it was maybe old John Walkinshaw himself keeping me company or wanting to tell me something.
But, my dear, what on earth are you thinking?
I'm only curious about the history of this house and our family. I'm wondering how it all came about. The loss of the estate, the lawsuit, why it was bequeathed away.
Well, Janet, that lawsuit lasted 13 years and it took a terrible toll on my mother, as well as on Will and me. I really think the past is best left alone. And you, of all people, should not be making yourself anxious over it. You must think about getting well and taking up your duties again.
Oh, I'm sorry. I told you it was ridiculous. Please just ignore my silly notions.
Well, my tea is finished and it's time I changed out of my travelling clothes. And more importantly, you need to rest, Janet.
You think I'm seeing things that aren't there?
I think you're very tired and you need to build up your strength.
Please, say nothing to Will. He worries about me.
Very well, Janet. Lie down now and think no more about it. It's not good for you, dear.
Oh, thank you. I think I will sleep for a while.
Yes, Janet, do get some rest. I really think it's high time you did.
Good morning, love. You feel well rested then?
I am, thank you, Will. And tired of having my breakfast brought to me like an invalid. I'd far rather be down here with you.
Well, babies take their toll. On fathers too.
Huh.
Would you like eggs this morning? They're still hot.
Yes, please. And you may pour my tea, if my having a baby hasn't taken too much toll on you.
Very good, m'lady. You will rest, though, won't you, love? You're not thinking of coming with me to supervise the digging out of the old ditches, I hope.
Oh, is that what you're doing today? I did wonder
you're
if I...
You're not coming.
I'm teasing you. There are still some papers I want to go through in the library. Very quietly, of course. I promise not to exert anything at all, except my understanding.
Yes, I wanted to speak to you about that.
About the papers?
About the library, really. Isabella said you were a little uneasy in there.
Ah, she spoke to you then.
Don't look like that, Jinty. She was concerned for you. She wondered if you might be a little delirious after the baby.
I was sleepy, that was all. And she took me by surprise. I was just talking nonsense to get rid of her.
You're not afraid then?
Of your sister? Of course not.
No, of this. This old house and its dark corners and hidden rooms.
Indeed I am not. We're the ones bringing it back to life, aren't we?
That's what I told her. I said, you're the bravest and most sensible person I know. How many young wives would poke a shotgun through their bedroom window to frighten away intruders on the lawn?
That was years ago, Will. I only fired one barrel. Poor Kate Allen was staying with us, do you remember? She was terrified. But they looked so funny as they ran for their lives that I burst out laughing, and then she did too.
I do remember. I was away on a hunting trip with all the men folk. When we came home, poor Miss Allen was still as white as a ghost, and you were still laughing.
Are you asking me to give up my researches?
I wouldn't presume, but why go through all that old, dusty stuff when you can ask me anything you want to know?
Oh, you have all the answers, do you? Tell me this then. Why did your mother's cousin, John Walkinshaw Crawford, leave this estate to a complete stranger?
That again, Janet. Why are you so interested?
Because we have been given charge of it all. We're working so hard to restore it. Why was it left like that?
I don't really know, but I think it was...
Ask me anything, he says.
I think it was because he bore a grudge. For all of his life, at the way the family had treated him when he was a young man.
I had wondered about that. He very rarely came here, you said.
As I understand it, he settled in London and was the King's Falconer. But long before that, he had been moved down the army lists, demoted in rank, and he came rarely to Scotland after that.
Was he received by society still?
I believe so, but the family were very cold to him. My mother and her friends felt that somehow he had disgraced them all as well as himself. That's the story anyhow. No one ever wanted to speak about it, and conversations about him were hushed around me when I was a boy. In the end, I lost my curiosity on the whole affair.
There are pieces of the story missing still.
And you're going to complete the puzzle, aren't you?
Yes, I rather think I am. Pass the butter, please. September 1817. Having been to Glasgow, arranging with upholsterers about doing up the rooms of the old buildings, papering and so forth, we are very busy indeed. I have discovered two concealed closets in one of the ancient rooms. The first is very curious, with a heavy Gothic roof. It seems to have been a state prison, with double doors and receivers for many bolts. Even stranger is the other closet, which has a hole in the floor with enough to admit a man to descend straight. But how deep? Tradition says to the level of the river, or a communication with Dean Castle, just as the nurse told me, so that they could assist each other in times of war or siege. Who's there? Will? That feeling again. Of being watched. It's you, isn't it? Cousin John. Dead more than 20 years. I can't see you, but I know you're here. Why? You abandoned this place years ago. You neglected it and left it to strangers. Why have you come back? Do you hear that? My children laughing, bringing the castle back to life. Were you a child once, I wonder, all those years ago? Did you go exploring in the woods and fields and the hidden places of the castle before life made you so bitter that you would will it all away?
Come on, Kilmarnock. What are you holding back? What are you afraid of?
Who said I'm afraid? I'm just looking out for you. I don't know what your father will say if he finds us breaking into these rooms.
We're not breaking in. I thought you wanted to find the tunnel. We had no luck at your end.
If there was an entrance at Dean Castle, it was filled in centuries ago. Why are you so set on finding the tunnel anyway?
I don't even remember seeing this room. It's never been used in my time. Probably full of rats. I want to find it before I go away to the regiment.
If they'll have you.
They'll have me now I've turned 14. Let's get this door open. Oh, it's all rusted up. I can't turn.
Oh, let me. Oh, got it. There you are, weakling.
I'll show you who's a weakling. Ow, I'll get you next time, you cheating bastard.
Hey, come over here.
What is it?
See this closet? Can we open this?
Is it locked?
No, it's given. Well, come on and help you.
Can you not manage it, weakling?
It's coming. Oh, by heaven, I think we've found it.
That's it. That must be it. It's the tunnel.
We found it. Well, I found it.
You can't even open the closet. Let me see.
Watch out. You don't know what's down there.
I can see the beginning of a tunnel. There's a hook and an old rope. Somebody's used this for something. The siege, maybe? It looks steep. There's some steps, though. I'm going down.
Have you lost your wits? For pity's sake, come back up, you young idiot, before you kill yourself.
We'll need torches to see properly, but...
Ah! John! Young fool! John!
The steps gave way. I don't know what happened.
How far did you fall? Oh, I can see you. Just, we have to get you out. Are you hurt? If you've broken your leg, the army will no take you.
I don't think I have, but I can't reach the steps. I can't quite.
I'm coming down.
No, Will.
If I lean right down, no, I'll have to lie down to reach you.
Go and get help. Bring somebody.
No, if it collapses again, you'll go with it. I'll use a rope. I'll tie it round this hook and round me.
Who's lost his wits? What if the rope breaks?
We die together, my friend. Friends forever and aye.
Heaven help us.
Pray heaven for a strong rope and a stout hook. Now you reach up. And I'll reach down.
Almost.
Yep, yeah. Grasp my wrist.
Oh. I think you saved my life there, Killy.
Yeah, I think I did, you bloody young fool.
Look at us. We better get ourselves clean before anybody sees us. I owe you a favour, Will.
Yeah, I think you do.
Well, come on, we'll raid the kitchen. Are you not starving?
Well, well, John Walkinshaw Crawford, how do you do? Ever since I started working here in the library, I felt someone watching me as I write. Someone sitting in that old-fashioned chair by the window. Do you know, I meant to throw it away, but found that I couldn't. Instead, I had it cleaned up and put back there so that I might use it sometimes. But I've never quite dared to... It was your chair, wasn't it? What is it you want? To frighten me away? No, I don't think so. I'm not afraid of you, because I don't believe you wish me or my family any harm. Yet you did harm to them, and to this house, when you willed it away from the family, and set the lawyers to quarrelling for 13 long years. I believe I have found some of your story. You were a distinguished officer in His Majesty's army. You joined as a boy and rose to the rank of Lieutenant Colonel. I found your service records. You fought with distinction at Dettingen and again in Fontenoy. And then suddenly, the army demoted you. You were moved back down the list to the humble rank of captain. You were disgraced in the eyes of society, and some even called you traitor behind closed doors. And now I know why, and why the family chooses never to mention it, even 70 years later. I have your letters here. I have the army lists and records, the terms of your will, and the stories told and retold by people whose memories go back almost to the 45 Rebellion and its terrible, brutal aftermath. I'll sit here beside you, shall I? I can bring my chair. No, don't trouble yourself, Cousin John. I'm stronger than I look, and anyway, you're merely a figment of my imagination. I will tell you how I think it was, and you can judge for yourself whether I have it right. We go back, I think, to 1746. The year before, on Culloden Field, that butcher, the Duke of Cumberland, had wrought his terrible revenge on the rebel forces, slaughtering hundreds where they lay on the battlefield. Their leaders were taken to London to be tried in an English court. Among them, your dearest friend, William Boyd, 4th Earl of Kilmarnock.
Begging your pardon, sir. I'm obliged to check every visitor for weapons before I let him in.
Yes, I know. Just be sure mine don't get stolen, will you? I hold you responsible. What's the matter, man? Didn't you hear what I said?
Oh, beg your pardon, sir. Not used to the Scotch way of speaking. Keep your weapons secure. I will. That's our job here, sir. Keeping things secure.
Well, open the door.
I'll be back in a short time to escort you out, sir.
These bloody insolent Englishmen. I'd half a mind to beat him where he stood.
Oh, thank God you came, John.
You sent for me.
And you didn't have to come.
Aye, I did, Will. Here.
And you'd shake my hand? You, a lieutenant in the King's army, John.
Friends forever and I, we said. Have you forgot?
I thought you might have.
No.
Here. Sit. It's not much of a welcome, and there's no whisky in offer.
I'll manage. I'll send you some.
You bring a breath of fresh air, John. And some sweet memories.
Aye. We got into some scrapes.
Do you mind the time we met the blacksmith poet on the road? Every village had a blacksmith poet. Not content with stewing their horses, they wanted to rhyme their way through life.
Even so.
Even so?
Startling him so he fell into the ditch like that was not...
was not an act of a gentleman.
And he wrote us a poem for our pains. Do you remember
it? I've never forgotten. There goes Crawford Lund and Lord Boyd. Of grace and manners both are void. For like the bull among the kye, they boo at folk as they gang by.
What it is to be young.
And alive.
Alive. Thanks to you. They allow you writing materials, I see.
They do. I'd be glad if you would hear some of what I've written.
Well, I wish you could tell me why.
Why I fought against German George and his son.
Aye. Why you took up arms against the king. Your father was for his father in the last rebellion.
Aye, but my wife's father was not.
Was that it then? Loyalty to your father-in-law brought you to this.
How long have you known me, John? Since when have I cared about politics and causes?
What then?
I didn't give a damn for either Bonnie Charlie Stuart or King German George, and I didn't give a farthing for their rights to the throne. But I was starving. If Mohammed had raised his standard, I'd have fought for him too.
Is that what you brought me here to say? That this had nothing to do with your wife?
Is that what they're saying, John? Why should I care? I married her for love, if truth be told.
Her father fought with the rebels in 15 and lost his lands. Her grandfather was executed for treason before that. People think you were persuaded by Anne and her family to join them this time round. What else would they think?
Anne's not to blame.
It was she introduced you to the Pretender, though.
She did. He's a very persuasive man, who embroiders the truth to suit his dreams when all's said and done. He promised a fortune to those who followed him. And I didn't need a fortune. I just wanted my debts paid. Well, I gambled and I lost. Played my guilt in Westminster Hall yesterday before the Lord High Steward and his court. You know how it is. There's no way out now. But I don't want my boy to be disinherited. I want...
You will be.
You don't sweeten the pill, do you, John? You never did. But I have to hope he keeps the title at least. I must address the court tomorrow to plead my case. Will you listen to what I've written, John?
Aye.
And if I fail, if I really must die, one more favour to ask you. But I'm afraid if you grant it, you'll pay a high price.
You talk of paying a high price, Will. I think yours will be higher.
Friends forever.
Forever and I, Will.
I shall not attempt to say anything in justification of a crime which is of too heinous a nature to be vindicated, and which any endeavour to excuse would rather aggravate than diminish. With unfeigned humility, I am ready to submit to the sentence I am too aware I deserved. I have already owned myself guilty, and covered with confusion and grief, I throw myself at His Majesty's feet for mercy. I have a son, my lords, who has the honour to carry His Majesty's commission, who has been educated in the firmest loyal principles and brought up with the warmest attachment to His Majesty's interest. He adhered to the principles of his family and nobly exposed his life at the Battle of Culloden in defence of his king and the liberty of Great Britain, which his unfortunate father was in arms to destroy. If, from his unbounded mercy, my royal master shall incline to spare that life which I have justly forfeited, let me owe it to His Majesty through the intercession of your lordships, who are witnesses to my grief and repentance. But if justice will not allow of mercy, my lords, I will lay down my life with patience and resignation.
On the 18th of August in the year of our Lord, 1746, at 6 o'clock, a troop of lifeguards, one of horse grenadiers and 1,000 of the foot guards, marched from the parade in St. James's Park through the city to Tower Hill to attend the execution of the rebel lords. At 10 o'clock, the block was fixed to the stage, covered with black cloth, and several sacks of sawdust were brought up to strew on it. Soon after, their coffins were brought, covered with black cloth and ornamented with gilt nails. On the Earl of Kilmarnock's was a plate with this inscription: William, Earl of Kilmarnock, beheaded 18th August 1746 in the 42nd year of his age, with an Earl's coronet over it, and coronets over the six handles.
He's coming.
Look! A traitor, they say.
Where? Oh my God! A handsome figure.
The sheriff's report that the Lord Kilmarnock requested that his head might not be held up as usual and declared to be that of a traitor, but instead that four persons, led by his friend, the Laird of Crawfordland, might be appointed to receive the head, that it might not roll about the stage, but be speedily, with his body, put into the coffin.
Will he come up, my lord?
I will, and without a guard. My God, this is terrible.
Will you address the crowd, my lord?
God has so willed that I must and will lay down my life with patience and resignation. My last breath shall be employed in the most fervent prayer for the preservation and the prosperity of His Majesty and His august house, and to beg His forgiveness and the forgiveness of my country.
I kneel, my lord, to cry your mercy for what I must do.
And I forgive you. Here's my purse to seal it. But you must be quick. My hands are trembling, and I will not be dishonoured before the crowd. As soon as I drop this cloth, you must strike.
My lord, you must tuck up your hair and pull down your collar. So you must bare your neck completely.
John! John Crawford!
Here, Will. Let me help you.
It's time, John.
Aye.
Remember?
I remember.
Don't let my head roll in the dust of this damned scaffold. Don't let them cry me a traitor as they hold my poor head aloft, John.
I'll not forget my promise to you. We will receive your head when the breath is taken from you. I will let no man dishonour you. I will place you in your coffin with all the respect and friendship I owe you, Will.
Then I'm done. I'm ready.
Friends, make ready.
My lord, you must take your hands from the block. Hold them behind you, so. May God have mercy upon you.
Godspeed, my friend.
His lordship dropped his handkerchief, and the executioner at once severed his head from his body, except only a small part of the skin, which was immediately divided by a gentle stroke. The head was received in a piece of red baize by his friends, and the body immediately put into the coffin. The scaffold was then cleared from the blood, fresh sawdust strewed, and that no appearance of a former execution might remain, the executioner changed such of his clothes as appeared bloody. And that is why they disowned you, Cousin John. Your loyalty to the man who was deemed a traitor by that court in London gravely tarnished your reputation. And your family in Scotland wanted nothing more to do with you. Isn't that the case? You are an elusive man, and not an easy one to know. So many of your books were destroyed when the old tower was set on fire. Ancient family papers were conveyed to Edinburgh for safekeeping, where a fool of a lawyer used them to light his fire because he could not read them. Hardly a trace of you remains, Cousin John. Only a box of business letters, like this one to Mr. Matthew Dickey, your agent here in Scotland. Dear Sir, as several of my friends in the South seemed to expect a visit from me during the course of the summer, I thought it the proper season to do it, when I should find the greatest number of them in town. I shall be glad to hear from you, and how affairs go on in Ayrshire. I am, dear Sir, your most obedient, humble servant, J.W. Crawford. And so on. Your correspondence shows me only your reluctance to travel to Scotland. I have found not a single letter to or from your family, and nothing to suggest that you ever had to do with them again. Indeed, I believe that the society of your London friends came to mean far more to you than any in our humble county of Ayrshire. Then I found this, folded many times and tucked under the flap of the final letter. It's very difficult to read, but it is a record of your will. Do you remember this, Cousin John? John Walkinshaw Crawford. The 5th day of March, 1793. Know all men by these presents that Lieutenant Colonel John Walkinshaw Crawford of Crawfordland, for the love, favour and affection I have and bear for Thomas Coutts, Esquire, banker in London, will be held to have given granted and disposed to and in favour of the said Thomas Coutts, Esquire, and his heirs, successors and assignees, heritably and irredeemably, all and whole the estate of Crawfordland. Your kin had disowned you, John, and you waited until the very end of your life, it seems, to punish them for it, to repay them in kind.
That was a good dinner, Thomas. I thank you.
It's entirely my pleasure, John.
If I'm taking you away from the family, just tell me.
Taking me away from? Believe me, with three daughters hungry for food, frocks and gossip, and their mother encouraging them all the while. No, it's you doing me a favour, John. And anyway, we've seen less of you lately. It's good to have a chance to talk.
Well, I've not been so well as I was. These London winters, they're more trying than they used to be since I reached my 80 years.
Aye, I know what you mean. London's milder than either Edinburgh or Ayrshire, perhaps, but even so, you can't stray away from a good fire in this weather. Will I refill your glass?
No, thank you. This'll do me.
Speaking of Ayrshire, how's the estate going on? Your agent, what's his name? He deals with the running of Crawfordland, I think.
Yes, young Dickie's reliable enough. Took over from his father. No complaints there. It's what to do with it now that concerns me.
With what?
With the estate. Crawfordland. Where should it go when I'm no longer here?
I thought that was settled long ago, John.
Aye, it was. But things have changed since then.
I know the estate's not what it was, but... But what will happen when...
I'm not what I was, Thomas. You can't know how much I envy you. Not your wealth, not your prosperous great banking house. The name of Coutts is so well known that the great and the good flock to bring you their money, my friend. But what I do envy you for is the endless chatter of your daughters, and Susanna presiding over your dinner table with her bonny smile and cheerful conversation.
And the sharp tongue whenever anybody else steps out of line.
That too. She'd have made a fine sergeant major in my old regiment. Nobody would have crossed her twice.
What is it ails you, John?
Friendship and family. And a man's reputation. That's what life is really all about. And when the reputation is gone and the family deserts you, there's only friendship left.
You still feel your losses keenly, John?
When they killed Kilmarnock, I lost my dearest friend and mentor. I lost my position in the King's army, even though I was one of the best they had.
You made your reputation as a bonny fighter, I hear.
I had the rank to go with it. But the world never saw me the same way after I helped Kilmarnock die. And my family never did either. The Crawfords mean nothing to me now. But you do, and your family. Friendship is all that's left to me, Thomas.
What do you want to do?
I want to leave it to you.
But why? I don't need more money.
When you married Susanna, you told me once the whole of good society turned its back on you.
Susanna was a servant.
Exactly.
And the best wife a man could have.
As I see. But we have that in common, Thomas. We don't quite conform for all our successes. We're not quite what people expect us to be, but we are friends. I'm going to change my will and name you as my successor. If you don't want the money, give it to your daughters for their dowries. I'm sure they'll know how to spend it.
We both need time to think about this, John. This is not a decision to be taken lightly. There will be consequences.
Aye. Perhaps.
Meantime, let's speak on more cheerful topics. I'll ring for some more coal and another bottle, shall I?
The stone battlements of the old tower are being renewed, and the tower itself roughcast with Benston lime, that being considered the most adhesive. There's a fierce wind blowing. No work will be done on the tower today. Cousin John, I know you're still here. I have grown so used to your presence here that I even sewed a new worsted cover for that old chair of yours. You have watched me piecing together your story, and I have felt you grieving for your dear friend, Kilmarnock. Are you not tired of grieving, Cousin John? Look around you. Your house is restored. Crawfordland is full of light and children's laughter now. The castle tower is rebuilt, the forest replanted, the gardens flourishing. See beyond these walls. There are the copse, the Greenhead Bank, the bee yard, and look, I saved your pond at the south end of the castle. It had been sorely neglected by you, John, if I may make so bold. But I have had it refilled and planted round with shrubbery to preserve its ancient style. Crawfordland blooms and thrives again, does it not? So I ask you, will you now grant us this house of your own free will, Cousin John? John? John Walkinshaw Crawford? Fare thee well then, restless spirit. God speed you on your way.
In There Goes Crawfordland, the part of Janet Crawford was played by Kerry Burley, and that of William Crawford by Lorenzo Navani. Diane Brooks played the nurse, and Kirsten Maguire was Isabella Keith. Alex Bennett was John Walkinshaw Crawford, and Ewan Galbraith, the Earl of Kilmarnock. The part of Thomas Coutts was played by Ian McAleese. All other parts were played by members of the cast. Original music for the play was by David Simpson. The violinist was Philip Smith. There Goes Crawfordland was recorded in Glasgow. Our sound engineer was David Simpson and Alex Bennett, producer. There Goes Crawfordland was written and directed by Jill Korn and is based on true events that took place at Crawfordland Castle in Ayrshire. The play is part of an Ayrshire trilogy, an audio drama series supported by Creative Scotland.